Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Main Menu Live this week. This week we have with us a number of guests, and before we get to that, let me introduce my co-host, Daryl Shandro. Hello, Daryl.
Good evening. Hello there,
well,
everybody.
Good evening. Let's give everybody the contact information, and then we'll hear from Access Watch, and then we'll bring in everybody and chat with them. So, the phone number tonight, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, if you'd like to call into the show. And the phone lines are open right now. And you want to give them the MSN information, Daryl? Daryl?
Yes.
You want to give them the MSN information?
Oh, I'm sorry. There's a little bit of a static on the Pat's side of the house there.
Okay.
Main menu at acbradio.org. That's main menu at acbradio.org for the MSN Windows Live Messenger contact this evening.
Okay, good enough. All right, well, let's hear from Jamie. He wants to talk to us all about Adobe Acrobat Reader version 8.0, and it's really kind of a coincidence because 8.1 of Adobe Acrobat Reader just came out today.
This week's Access Watch software review comes to us courtesy of Jeffrey Shockley. Jeffrey reviews Adobe Acrobat Reader version 8.0. His screen reader is JAWS for Windows 8.0 with all the latest updates installed. And he gives the program a 4 rating. Here are Jeffrey's comments. If you are wondering whether you should upgrade to Adobe Reader 8 from a previous version, you will be glad to know that it works with JAWS 8. I rate Adobe Reader 8.0 a 4 because when you first install the program, there is a screen that says Beyond Adobe Reader that is not accessible. You must use the JAWS cursor to check the box that says something like Do not show this at startup, and Adobe Reader will work fine from there. When installing Adobe Reader, you can choose to set up the program with accessible features for screen readers and other things such as magnifiers. I recommend choosing the Recommended Settings button from the dialog box that comes up and going through the rest of the installation process. From my experiences, Adobe Reader 8 seems to perform much better than Adobe Reader 7 did on my system. It took it only a few seconds to a minute to open a PDF document that was about 145 pages in length. Jeffrey then gives us his email and MSN contact information if we want to get a hold of him. You can read Jeffrey's review as well as all the other reviews at www.accesswatch.info. You can also visit our blog at http://accesswatch.wordpress.com. Thank you, Jeffrey, for that review. Have a great week.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
That's right, if you want to participate in the show tonight. All right, let's welcome our guest. And first we'll bring on Chrissy Cochran from the UK, our illustrious great leader of ACB Radio, the ACB Radio director, Chrissy Cochran. Hello, Chrissy.
Hello, Jeff. You have a check in the post. No, seriously, it's stupid o'clock over here, but welcome and good evening, everyone over there.
Yes, indeed. And we're really happy to welcome Dancing Dots. Bill McCann has joined us tonight. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Jeff.
Hey there. Wow, that was those were some really impressive presentations, and we're real excited to talk with you tonight further about Dancing Dots, the company, and to try to find out more information from you all about the company. And we brought Chrissy on because she's definitely an artist, and a musician, and she's produced quite a number of things, and she's going to give us a hand here in talking with all with you know talking with you tonight all about the products.
That sounds like a plan to me. Appreciate your kind words, and I want to thank you for inviting me to come onto the program and share some of what we've been up to. It's hard for me to believe that I've actually been doing this business with Dancing Dots since 1992. That's 15 years.
Wow, yeah. I was just going to ask, you know, there's some people out there who probably don't really know a lot about Dancing Dots, and so I thought it would be a good idea to kind of start with a little bit of an overview, a history of Dancing Dots, and then we'll dive into the products a little more. And Chrissy, you can interject at any point, of course. And of course, you too, Daryl, if we have any MSN messages that come through. And, of course, the phone lines are open, 866-400-JEFF, 866-400-5333. So, Bill, tell us, how did Dancing Dots get started?
Well, Dancing Dots started, like so many things, out of a combination of necessity and frustration. I studied music from the age of 9, had a teacher who taught me Braille music for 6 months. She got married, moved away, never had another teacher who knew Braille music or really had taught any blind people music right up through getting my degree from a conservatory here in Philadelphia. And one of the problems I ran into quickly, one of the realities, was that there just aren't enough wonderful people who can sit down with a printed score and apply the rules of Braille music transcription and hand you a completed Braille score. They can do that, but they're typically volunteers, and you can't tell them, I need this tomorrow. And as a consequence, there were times when I didn't get my music for weeks at a time and sometimes months, and sometimes after the concert or the church service had the date of it had passed. So there was a great deal of frustration, but just to give you the quick answer, I finished music school in 1980. I had my degree in trumpet performance with a jazz emphasis. Spent about a year playing in every nightclub and church that would have me. I taught privately blind and sighted students, and I even sold some arrangements of my music, but I quickly saw that unless I wanted to go and teach in a school classroom environment, I was going to be really poor for a really long time. And so I decided, what can I do? And I took up computer programming, and after 10 months of almost quitting music entirely because the course was so intense, I took a job with an oil company in Philadelphia, and I did COBOL programming and business programming for about 10 years. Until the close of 1991, I had continued to perform as a musician and on the weekends and so forth, but leading a band, playing in church, doing what I could do. And I kept thinking, you know, it would be a great idea to write some software that would turn music into Braille. But I was pretty busy doing my music and my regular gig, and I thought, maybe someone else will do it. In fact, way back when, I spoke to David Holliday, who had raised Dot Computing at that time, and he thought it was a great idea, too. But I think David found out what I found out later, which was it's a really time-intensive project, and it's not something you kind of drink a few pots of coffee over a couple weekends and get it done. So it never happened, and by the end of 91, I was quite ready for a change. My company was ready to get smaller. They offered, actually, people who volunteered to leave, they offered us a pretty nice package to go, and I saw that as my chance to start up what did become Dancing Dots, actually officially started in 1992.
Wow, okay. So now, only because you know, I'm a programmer too, and programmers want to know, but I want to go back to real music in just a minute, but
okay.
Only because it's sort of kind of just kind of interested to know. Now, what are, I know the cake talking scripts are probably written in primarily JAWS scripts, right? Is there any COM objects or anything like that behind the scenes with that, or is that or would that be giving away too much technical detail? Or
well, I could say that, except I really should tell you I can't answer that because
The Cake Talking project came along later, and its developer is an independent, brilliant guy named David Pinto.
Oh, yes, okay.
Resides in California. And David and I met up, I think, in 98 or 99. And at that point, Goodfeel had been released for a few years, and we were finding that, yeah, there are a lot of people who appreciate Braille music, but there may be more people who simply who may not read Braille or may not have an interest to read Braille, but they want to make music with their computer, and they want to produce audio in some format, usually some kind of singer-songwriter, pop kind of thing, but all kinds of things, radio programs,
sure.
Jingles, and so
mm-hmm.
forth. And so, yes, Cake Talking is a very, very big file of JAWS source code.
Yeah, I bet.
And I've never read it because it's David's. It's not mine. Our agreement is that we are his exclusive distributor.
Gotcha, okay.
He does the developing, and we try to do the selling and supporting. And
gotcha.
It's working out. I guess we've been doing this now for about 8 years.
Yeah. Well, now, the Goodfeel product, you primarily were the developer on that then, I would suppose.
Yes. I wrote the prototype for Goodfeel in 92, 93. And in 93, we got a major grant from the U.S. Department of Education to bring it from the prototype phase to an actual product. And that's when I was smart enough to hire a very bright guy named Albert Milani. And Albert took my prototype and built it up into a product. He added some of the things that I had never really tried to do as a COBOL programmer, like making a user interface. And
well, being blind, I bet you that'd be difficult too. I mean, yeah. Especially in a GUI.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's one of the things that really is probably one of the most difficult things about programming is, you know, dealing with the whole graphical user interface and getting things laid out right and aesthetically pleasing to the eye.
That's right. So in the end, we had four people working on the source code for Goodfeel. My piece was really to write what we call the formatter that takes the musical information and figures out what the equivalent Braille is and lays it out on the page and does the right, you know, page breaks and line breaks and applies the rules of Braille music. And so that was quite enough programming for me, believe me.
Yeah, no kidding. Now, did you know Braille music pretty well, you know, in grade school and that kind of thing, or did you learn that in school at that early age?
No, as I said, I was pretty much self-taught. I picked it up as I went along.
Really?
Because after my first teacher, I went to sighted teachers, and I was working from Braille transcriptions of method books. And they would say, oh, you're supposed to get louder there, and I'd say, oh, I guess that's one of those crescendo things, you know. So I kind of picked it up. Now, when I started Dancing Dots, I actually got the official manuals and studied and tried
right.
to fill in the gaps. And it's interesting because reading something is one thing and writing it is another. I think it's kind of like when we try to speak a foreign language, it's a lot easier to listen to a native speaker and interpret what they say. But when we want to express ourselves, it gets a little harder. And it's the same thing with music, and not just Braille music. Albert, who's my business partner, you know, he's played keyboard all his life, had lessons, played in church groups and things. He's an electrical engineer, but his love is music. And he said the same thing. He said, you know, until I came here and started working on this project, I thought I could read music. But when you start to really look at it and try to figure out what that stuff means, it really gets a little harder. I think when you sight read music, or even when you read the Braille, you kind of skip the bits that don't make any sense to you and say, well, you know, I'll just get to the meat and potatoes of it. But when you really have to look at it and consider every aspect of the score, it, you see that there's a lot to it.
Now, how about you, Chrissy? Did you, you know, when you were growing up and when you were beginning to learn music, did you read Braille music?
I read Braille music for a little while, Jeff. I couldn't get on with it. I found it strange, where you get C being D, etc., etc. I could never understand the logic of that, and it set me back. I got up to what we have as grade 5 piano, where you have to do music theory and that as well. And at that point, me and classical music, which is all they taught at school at the time, which is much better now, of course, we parted company somewhat.
Oh, that's very interesting. Well, when I was growing up, Daryl, you may remember Mrs. Barron. Do you remember?
Yeah, it's vaguely familiar.
Yeah, she was our music teacher for, oh my gosh, let's see. Nine or ten years, and she attempted to teach me Braille music. I played the violin for 5 or 6 years, and I picked up the saxophone and for a few years. And you wouldn't want me to do that now. that would not be a good thing to everybody's ears. I'll guarantee it. But yeah, I found Braille music to be really difficult to pick up too. Which brings us to Goodfield. So Bill, tell us about. Goodfield, exactly. You know, we kind of heard about some of the new features that are now available, but let's kind of go back a little bit and talk about exactly what is the product, who is it really intended for, and how might it be used in, you know, for example, it sounds like it would be really beneficial in, say, school or educational environments.
Yes, exactly. I'd say the majority of the users of Goodfield at this point, the profile would be a sighted person whose task it is to prepare Braille music materials for a student in school. And let me just comment on the Braille music problems. I think we've all run into a lot of difficulty in understanding the code. And I think one of the unfortunate things is that a lot of those attitudes came from sighted people who, from the very beginning, really didn't understand Braille in general. In fact, if you study the life of Louis Braille, you'll find that at one point all his books were burned because the well-meaning director, the new director, felt that blind people shouldn't read Braille. And the music just got even worse because musicians, we've all invested, sighted players invest a great deal in that system, and when another system comes along that expresses the same information in a different way, it really freaks them out, to put it in the vernacular, and it really, they don't trust it, and it doesn't make sense to them. And so I think a lot of those attitudes get projected onto us as blind musicians. Louis Braille was really quite an intelligent guy, and he saw that the system that relies on the fact that the eye can take in not only left to right but up and down just doesn't work for us. And so he devised a system that allows the pitch and the rhythm of a note to fit under the tip of one's finger. But anyway, to go back to Goodfield, it really was, up until a couple years ago, a product for sighted people. And it really was designed to address the problem I alluded to earlier, which is there are just not enough sighted people who can manually crank out Braille music scores. And, in fact, I think at this moment in the U.S., I think there might be 30 Braille music transcribers authorized, certified by the Library of Congress. So when you put up 30 against potentially thousands of people who want to read hundreds or thousands of pieces, you see that there's something missing. And my idea was, well, instead of, you know, taking the print score and mailing it off to some anonymous volunteer or agency somewhere and just sort of waiting for it to come back, we could use the pool of sighted people who know how to read print music, who know how to use computers, and who can actually work in the medium they're comfortable with, which is looking at print music on the screen. And when the information on the screen agrees with the information they're looking at on the hard copy, they can say, okay, here, Goodfield, now this is the information. You apply the rules of Braille music transcription, and you create the Braille music score. And essentially the idea we started out with. But a couple of years ago, we were blessed with a grant from the U.S. Department of Education, and we actually hired Dr. Leopold Hocken, who wrote the LIME software. He worked for Dancing Dots part-time for 2 years, and he made some changes in LIME, and we did some JAWS scripting that allow us to do what we can do now, which is that a blind person, as you saw in my demo, a blind person can actually use LIME for two things: to learn new material from pieces prepared maybe by a sighted copyist or imported from other music notation programs, and secondly, to actually express their own musical ideas and get them printed out.
Both in print or Braille.
Right.
Okay, yeah, so that's really the key thing, right? So that either a blind person can use the software and you know, create a score and print it out for a teacher or something, mm-hmm. or vice versa.
Yes, and the blind people and the sighted people use the technology in different ways. I mean, there's a there's an intersection, but the goals are usually different. The sighted people, their object generally is to get something into Braille for the blind student. Or for somebody to be able to listen to, as you heard on my presentation. And the blind people are generally using it to learn that material, or maybe they have to write a theme and variations. I don't know, Chrissy, when you left school, this wasn't a requirement, but did you ever have to have someone write down some music for you?
Oh, yes. And you know, it's not the same as being able to do it yourself, and that's the wonderful thing about this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've gone to rehearsals because in taking my degree, I had to write things, and then I like to write for bigger groups. And I remember going to a rehearsal of our 16-piece jazz band after having stayed up with a kind friend of mine for a couple of late nights who copied out parts, and then I heard things I never composed. And because there were misunderstandings between what I thought he was writing down and what he was writing down, and of course the guys reading what he wrote down didn't know any of that, and they just played it as they read it, and so we had to go back and revise a lot of things, and I got quite frustrated. And I know anyone listening who's been through this exercise, as Chrissy, I could hear it in her voice, you know, it's a frustrating exercise.
I would think
it yes.
Would.
If you're effectively using an amanuensis, it doesn't work. It's so open to things going wrong in terms of just little things which can throw out a whole composition.
Exactly. I remember the last major project I tried to do was a full jazz band plus some strings and some extra lower brass and harp. And again, a friend of mine who had Finale, a sighted friend of mine, was kind enough to let me play a lot of it in, and he kind of patched it all together. There were different movements. But to make a long story short, the 45 minutes I had to rehearse the group, of that 45 minutes, about 28 of those minutes were spent in trying to figure out why the brass had an extra measure than the strings, and where it was, and which one should get crossed out.
Oh,
and you know, we're just about to go on to play for this jazz festival, and I just made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to do this ever again unless I could say it's measure 55 and cross it out. And
with this system, you could in fact do a complete orchestral score.
Yes, you could, and you could bring. You could bring that Braille score with you. Because again, when we finally did do some playing, I remember hearing a wrong note in the second alto saxophone, and saying, well, I think you want to play F sharp there, not F natural. Oh, where? Well, let's see. The first section is 12 measures, and then there's 24, and I thought, measure 57. No, I'm resting there. Okay, let me think again. And, you know. It's just some people are brilliant. I think I did okay in school, but I don't know if I have that kind of mind to just say, yes, it's measure 57 You know, so I need that help. I want to have the score there, and of course, that's what sighted conductors do too.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. We have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, Jeff, and everybody.
I knew you would be calling in, Kelly. I was hoping you would anyway. How can we help you tonight?
Well, I was listening to your discussion on learning Braille music. Actually, a few years ago, when I was about 12 or something, I did get a book, Braille Music for Piano Beginners, it was called, and I'm sort of like everyone else. I mean, the first part wasn't too bad, but then they get into the bar over bar stuff, I think was what it was, and I was lost, you know, just totally lost. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if there are any other good sources for learning Braille music.
Okay, we'll let you listen on the air, okay, Kelly?
Okay.
Okay, great. Go ahead, Bill.
Right. There are some new resources. We published some courses by a gifted educator from Southern California, Richard Taish, and he has written what we all hope is the beginning of a series called The Introduction to Piano for the Blind Student. He's finished parts 1 and 2, and he's also written Introduction to Music for the Blind Student, parts 1 and 2. It's really hard to say because, you know, everybody starts at a different place, but I think Richard's method is extremely carefully laid out and presented in a graded way to try to bring people along. It is not necessarily a self-study course, although for some adults who are fluent literary Braille readers, we would recommend it. It's really intended for the music educator who's sighted, who has this blind student, maybe one or two in a whole school district, and they really want to provide Braille music for a student in a situation where that student's classmates are reading print music and where that student is a good literary Braille reader. So, for example, lots of the exercises in the print edition of the book are shown on facing pages. You'll see the print on one side, the print music, and then on the other side, the equivalent Braille in a Braille font. But it's not just a bunch of dots. There are annotations. There are arrows pointing to new signs that are being introduced that may say, okay, this is a double bar sign, or this is a fifth octave sign, or so forth. So I think Richard's taking some innovations with his course.
I really think this has got to be an extremely difficult thing to teach. I mean, looking at the fact that there's only 30, you know, transcriptionists out there who can even professionally handle this, you know, for the Library of Congress, for example. I would think it'd be really difficult to find, especially in younger grades, you know, adequate teachers to be able to teach that. Wouldn't you think, Bill?
Well, it is a problem because it falls through the cracks, and I'm not really sure what the solution is. I can say that we've sold hundreds of these courses, and only one of them was sent back with a note that says, I'm really sorry, I can't teach with this thing. So we know that Richard's work is part of the answer, but it's more of a structural thing. Vision teachers, I don't think, really are prepared to help in this area, and so it's spotty because sometimes the vision teacher has a little music background and they can help. Certainly music educators are not prepared and generally range from, you know, having anxiety about a blind musician in the group to flat-out hostility to having one in the group, and typically just are overworked and not ready to take on something that could you know, represent a big investment of their time and energy. And so where we see it work best is when the vision teachers and the music educators get together and they work together, and summer programs are also a piece of this. I'm going to be going down Saturday to spend 2 weeks teaching at the School for the Blind in Austin, Texas, in our second annual Braille Music Camp.
Oh, very interesting.
We have some questions coming in on MSN.
Okay.
We're sort of piling up on them, actually.
Okay, why don't you go ahead and start with them, Daryl?
Okay. Let's see. Petra Perizek writes in asking, saying he's a piano and flute player and a music composer, and he wants to know if he can take a Sibelius-saved score and get it into a BRF file somehow for embossing.
Well, the short answer is yes, although the details are somewhat technical, but you can export from Sibelius in a format called Music XML, and our Lime notation program can import that format and subsequently create a formatted Braille score, which can be represented as a basically an ASCII text file. We don't use the .brf format, but something very close called .gf. So I think the answer is yes. There are some, you know, gotchas there, and one of them is that the export-import process sometimes loses things in the translation. So there are some times when you're going to have to go into Lime and add back in certain details of the score. You'll certainly get the notes and the rhythms, but you may not get some minutia like finger numbers. In some cases, you don't get ties. And so these things have to be added back in. And so you either need a sighted assistant to do that editing in Lime, or maybe someone who can read to you. And if you use Lime Aloud, you can get that done.
Gotcha. Okay. Do we want to do another question?
Yeah, go right ahead, Daryl.
All right. Philip wants to know. He doesn't have a piano keyboard for his computer, and he wants to know if these products could be used to create those chords using a standard keyboard somehow.
Yeah, some of the things I did in my own demo there at the top of the hour, I was playing on the PC keyboard. Our Lime software gives you that alternative, and I think it's good for short passages. If you're serious about it, though, really invest in a MIDI keyboard. The newer ones attach via USB. You can get one as small as 2 octaves and as big as an 88-key keyboard, and they make your life a lot simpler.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it. I had a question. I know you said, there's a lot of difficulties with getting people to work together in the, in the school system. If somebody wants to learn music, is there any, is there anything that helps to make sure that happened as far as rules with IDEA and stuff like this that you're aware of? Are there people that buy your products because they need to be accessible?
I think there's the letter of the law and there's the spirit of the law, and then there are the people who just won't give up. And so you see varying results based on the mix of those things. As far as the letter of the law, the thing that we've seen work is if the parent or a vision teacher fights hard and gets Braille music reading written into the student's IEP, individual education plan, in this country at least, it will happen because it's part of the plan and that's mandated by law. Otherwise, it's really at the discretion of the music teacher or the vision teacher, and it's something that may or may not happen. And I wish I had the luxury to do a study of this because I think it would be interesting, but, you know, we're so busy developing and selling and supporting and traveling and training and whatever that we don't often get that kind of information except in, small anecdotes that are very unscientific survey.
Mm-hmm.
One of the questions that we got earlier in the week on the main menu list.
Yeah, I was just about to ask that one.
Oh, okay. You want to go ahead and ask that one?
Yeah. Miranda Borka wants to know if there could be made available a trial version of the cake talking script.
Yeah, that's something we've talked about for a long time and we've been working toward. There are some technical difficulties about it. Let me just say that we would like to see that happen, but we're not there yet, and I'm not sure we're going to be able to get around these technical difficulties. We authorize your unit of those scripts based on your JAWS serial number.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of thing where you're either authorized or you're not. And we could authorize the demo, perhaps, but then people who already have JAWS would have to uninstall it to run the JAWS demo, and it's just not pretty. So
you ought to get together with Jim Snowbarger. He does it with his scripts.
Yeah,
that's a great idea. In fact, Jim's a brilliant guy and has been a customer a long time. And his product, his latest innovation called Hotspot Clicker, this latest version of Cake Talking, they don't get in each other's way. Up until this point, Cake Talking was it was all or nothing at all, you know, we couldn't really make room for anything else. But if you know what you're doing with Jim's Hotspot Clicker, you can actually have the best of both worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a subsequent corollary to all this and ask what I think a lot of people might want to know? Is there ever a chance of a similar product coming out for other screen readers?
Yes, there is a chance. Let me first say that I'd like to see that happen because from a personal point of view, I started this business because I want blind musicians to have tools, and that really would make sense with our mission. From a business point of view, it makes sense too because we'd probably sell more. But one of the hurdles is that we started with JAWS because it has a scripting language, and a lot of the things that we do to get Braille music on a Braille display as you scroll through the screen or to get access to one of the effects in Sonar, there's so much crazy stuff going on behind the scenes. A lot of it verges on hacking. I mean, it's I don't know if David would admit that, but it's really, really under the hood stuff that has taken many, many hours of trial and error and work and development time. And all of that time costs money, and if we're doing that kind of work for another screen reader that doesn't have some of that scripting capability, it would stand to reason that it's probably going to take us longer, or we're going to have a much higher level of cooperation from the manufacturer of the screen reader to be able to make things happen. For example, having Lippold Hocken being able to make changes in Lime was wonderful because we didn't have to skim across the top of his application. We were able to go in and say, could you change this? Sure, I can change it. That happened with the guys at Cakewalk years ago. I finally got a meeting with them after telling them I thought they had a great product, and I told Ted Henter at the time, you have a great product, but I need to get you guys together. So they listened to us. In fact, at that time, I went up with Mike Mandel and Gordon Kent. This must have been 97, 98. Got in the room with the developers, showed them what we could do, what we couldn't do. One of the things, well, there was a picture of a microphone. We said, you know, we can't do anything with that. Can you put a little text that says microphone? Yeah, we can do that. So some of it is easy, but probably the first 80% of anything is fairly easy, but that last 20% takes time and money, and right now we don't have that much of either. But the short answer and the sincere answer is yes, I would like to see it work with other programs. I'd like to see Lime work with other screen readers. I would like to see the level of responsiveness and Sonar that we have with Cake Talking with other screen readers. And I say that because we should point out that a number of people are using Sonar and very happy with it using other screen readers. I know WindowEyes definitely. I don't know about Dolphin or other screen readers, but the difference is that they can get to a lot of the basic features, but some of the really heavy duty stuff that you heard Gordon do, are those features are simply not available.
Can you give us an example of, I was just going to ask you to kind of describe, you know, if I were to disable the Cake Talking scripts, what would the user experience be like? I mean, obviously, I've never even installed Sonar. I'm more of a SoundForge guy than you know, for what I need it for.
Well, what you'd do is you'd press Insert T, and it would read the title as Sonar, and then you'd try to move the arrow keys, and probably nothing would happen or nothing useful, and then you'd put the JAWS cursor on, and you'd find lots of graphic symbols and some text. And, you know, you try to read the manual and find some keyboard shortcuts, and there are some, but you would get fairly frustrated pretty quickly, I would think, trying to use the thing.
Okay, so really it is night and day kind of a thing.
It is. You know, we were talking earlier about the jump to GUIs, graphical user interfaces. The old version of Cakewalk was a whole lot like using a spreadsheet. Each track was a row, and it had columns, and you could arrow in a grid, you know, left and right, and it was pretty friendly. But when Windows came in, all of that went away.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, for lots of applications.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I still relish the days of WordPerfect for DOS.
Yeah, that
indeed.
Thing worked. 5.1, right?
Oh, big time. Yeah, you could produce some pretty amazing documents with that thing.
Yep.
And, you know, with reveal codes and everything, and even WordPerfect for Windows isn't quite the same, unfortunately. So, well, let's see. Chrissy, did you have any questions before we move on to kind of focus more on Cake Talking about Goodfeel?
No, you carry on, Jeff. I'm fascinated.
We do have one more question.
Okay, go ahead, Daryl.
Coming from Dan on MSN Messenger, he says, I have someone who's trying to teach me organ, but she doesn't know anything about Braille music. Would Goodfeel be the right product to get this translated into a Braille format? Which I think the answer to that is yes. And then he also asks, Is $12 a page about the going rate for someone to manually transcribe this stuff into Braille?
I think, yes, I agree. The answer is yes. The second question, I think that is within the range. It may be slightly high, but we offer a transcription service. Our current rate is $5.50 a Braille page, but there is a $20 an hour set up and proofing fees, so depending on the complexity of the music, that could bring the cost up to closer to $8, $9, $10 a page, depending on the music and how long it takes us to set it up and correct scanning errors and do some different formatting things that have to be done. I just wanted to quickly get Chrissy's point about Braille, you know. The D being C and the E being D. My theory on that is two things. Louis Braille was French. He spoke French. He may have studied English a little bit, but he certainly, when it came to music, he called the pitch we in the English-speaking world refer to as C, he called it Do. And I think that's why dots 1, 4, 5, he may have started there, as that representing the pitch for Do. And then if you know his alphabet, it kind of goes from there. If you look at literary equivalents from D, the sequence from D to J, as the 7 degrees of the Western scale that we know. But he called them Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, or maybe C. And so that may be a little trivia for you, but what I do when I teach people Braille music is I insist that they retrain their brain and do what's called code switching and don't think about literary equivalents at all. Let's just try to think about this as music. So anyway, that's a little trivia there for you about Braille music.
Wow.
That would make sense, actually, wouldn't it?
I would think it'd be really difficult, though, to turn the brain off and go, okay, you know, forget everything you've learned about literary Braille, throw it away, and we're going to start over.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but I can tell you it works, and I've seen it work in myself and lots of people. I mean, you could hand me a melody and I could sight sing it, and I know a lot of people who can do it. It's not that you forget it, but it's that you view it in a different way. It's kind of a filter, and it's a lot like what people do with Braille mathematics. You know, we have those six dots that make only 64 patterns. We have to recycle them and use them and make them stand for other things.
Yeah, it's kind of like Nemeth, right? I mean,
exactly.
You know, you're taught in grade school to read grade one, and then you go to grade two, and then, you know, as you get older, you learn these really complex, you know, other uses of Braille with Nemeth. And, yeah, I guess it really would be, you know, kind of the same thing, although I never could get used to it. But that's why I'm not playing music today.
Well, right. And that's an excellent point. I mean, not to pick on you or anything, but I mean...
Go ahead. You can pick.
Okay, I'll pick on you. You know, people like you. No, there are sighted people who aren't musical who look at print music and go, what? You know, so, I mean, if the musical concepts are not kind of in your genetic makeup, then no amount of study will probably make it make sense to you, because it's not just the representation, it's the concepts that underlie it that it may be a little bit confusing.
Well, amen to that, Bill.
So this is an issue that sighted people have too, then. It's not something that's intuitive for sighted people and not
well, I think it's ones. I think it's just a literary issue. I mean, I think I mean I don't know what printed music looks like, but I would imagine it's vastly different than, say, what they would read in a literary book.
Yes, it is. It's a bunch of horizontal lines, five at a time, and these little kind of balloon-shaped things that get written on. They sit on top of the line, or the lines intersect them, and some of them are filled in, and some of them have little flags on them, and you just have to learn what all that stuff means and process it while you're playing your instrument.
Interesting.
And there again, that's another concept that one sometimes needs to teach blind people. Not that they're going to use it as such, but just to know about things like treble and bass clef.
Very interesting.
Definitely. Very useful information, because we live in a world where the majority rules. The majority in the music field is looking at those funny things, and we need to know when we're sitting in a group of them and somebody says something about what clef it's in, or a coda, or the railroad tracks, or whatever slang they use, and we have to know what all that stuff means. They don't have to know what we are looking at, but we have to know what they're looking at, and that's just how it is. I mean, we can complain about it, but that is the reality.
Well, we have to conform to what, you know, 90% of the universe is doing, you know, in reference to both reading regular print as well as, you know, music. So we have a caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi, this is Tina from Colorado.
Hello, Tina.
And I was just going to say, I think what it is in terms of the actual Braille music code, let me preface this by saying I'm not a whole lot of a Braille music reader. I'm kind of half and half, I guess you could say. I've been learning to play the flute for the last 3 years, and we're using one particular book where I have a Braille copy and she has a print copy. And I guess all I have to say is, given the descriptions, when I've asked her about what the print music looks like, you know, I think Braille music is a whole lot easier than trying to figure out, okay, now how many lines up is this thing, and how many, you know, it's like, wow.
Very interesting.
So, anyway, you know, just my little plug in that. And also, as far as, I figured I would give a plug here for the Who's Afraid of Braille Music book, and also Betty Krolik's How to Read Braille Music, as kind of entry-level books to use to learn the basics of, you know, the nuts and bolts of Braille music.
Are those available through NLS, Tina?
I don't know if they're available through NLS, but they're available through I believe Dancing Dots, and also through National Braille Press and a couple of other places.
Yes, that's
and
that's
not
right.
That
that's right.
Either.
You know, who's Afraid of Braille Music? I wrote with Richard Tate, and it addresses kind of a lot of the trivia and the logic behind Braille music that we were talking about. You know, Braille being French and so forth. How to read Braille music and Who's Afraid you can get from National Braille Press. We also carry Who's Afraid directly from our website. But
and they're also
interesting
available
your
in
point
print
about
and Braille both.
Sorry?
Go ahead, Tina.
Available in print and Braille.
Exactly. The point you made about Braille being logical, I really couldn't agree more with it, because print people take that five-line staff, and if it has a little funny clef on the second line, it's the G clef, but if it's on the fourth line, it's the bass clef, and so every single line and pitch is redefined depending on what the clef is, whereas fourth octave C, which is what we'll call middle C, it's always fourth octave C, even if the print was in bass clef, treble clef, alto clef, whatever. So in a sense,
actually, I have a funny
is.
Story just briefly, and then I'll get off the line and listen on the air. When I was first, you know, getting together with my flute teacher and stuff, we were kind of filling in the gaps in terms of what I knew about, you know, music concepts in terms of print music, because I didn't really know a whole lot about it. But I think one of my first questions to her was, what happens if you're not in that first, you know, octave that are covered by the staff? What happens after that? Do they just go off into space somewhere? And then so we had an interesting discussion about ledger lines and things like that, because I was like, well, where does it go?
Very interesting.
Anyway,
okay, Tina, we'll let you listen
thanks.
On the air, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Okay. All right, you wanted to finish your thought there, Bill?
Oh, no, I was just agreeing about the logical...
Right.
Structure of Braille music and the uniform nature of it. Once you learn it, you learn it. But each system has, I mean, there's no perfect medium, and each system has its challenges. So
absolutely.
We can leave it at that, I suppose.
Okay. We have another caller. Let's bring the caller in. Hello, caller, and welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hey, guys. This is Matt Campbell.
Hello, Matt.
You know, you were talking about what printed music looks like. And I was reminded of a line from an Abbott and Costello skit, where Abbott hands the context of the skit is Costello wants to do music on the program, and Abbott is basically trying to show him how little he knows about music. So Abbott hands Costello a sheet of music and asks him, what do you see? And Costello says, I see a bunch of flies sitting on a fence.
That's great, yeah. Matt.
So that was all I wanted to say. I figured we could use a good laugh.
Matt, let me put you on the spot, and you can tell me to go away. But we were kind of talking about, screen readers being able to, be able to support scripting and to be able to work in, you know, an environment such as has been done with Cake Talking.
Yeah, I was listening.
And I don't know if this is something that you think that scripture would be able to be able to handle in the future.
I believe so. I think this is a niche enough application that we won't spend much, if any, time on it ourselves. But once scripture is a part of system access, I imagine someone like David Pinto would be able to tackle that.
Okay, good. Well, that gives you a little bit of information there, Bill, to kind of ponder and think about. And you know, we're not sure about availability of all of that. I know that that Saratech is hard at work on all kinds of things. So,
yeah, I can't give you any release dates or ETA yet.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Matt.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Yeah, thanks. Could I just say one thing, a couple thoughts before we run out of time? There's on dancingdots.com, if you click on the resources link, we have a heading of a very low-cost publication from National Braille Association, and it's called I forget the exact title, something about Print Music Tactile Graphics. It's a little book you can get, and it has raised lines of musical print musical symbols, and it's very handy. I think it's $5 from National Braille Association.
Hmm.
The other point I wanted to make about cake talking is that worldwide we have hundreds of users of the product, and most of them are just having fun with it. Maybe it's a part-time thing, but I'd say about 36 people are running their own studio businesses, and they have clients, and they have people come in and pay them to make recordings and to produce their records, and so it's a certain thing. But in some cases, it really is a vocational kind of alternative.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, before
we have one more question, if there's
okay, we can do that real quick. But I want to give Bill an opportunity to give prices
and
phone numbers and all that kind of stuff. So, go ahead, Daryl.
Okay. The question is from an unidentified user, just by email address. So, they ask, are there any accessible MIDI keyboards that don't have menus that wrap?
Oh, wow, great question.
Yes, this is a big problem. If you really want to go high-end, the Yamaha Motif really seems to have a lot of nice features for blind people, but it costs lots of money. It's a couple $1,000s. The lower-cost keyboards have those LCD displays, and they're pesky, and they're hard for us to get to. There's a company, and I'm blanking on the name, but some guys have written some nice software for one of the Kurzweil keyboards.
Neil Yours, I think, uses that.
Yeah, Dave Scrimenti is the guy who does it, and I forget what he calls his company. But the problem with the Kurzweil models they support, as far as I know, and you should check with them for the latest greatest, but I think those models aren't made anymore. So it is a problem, and it's something we want to be a part of the solution, but I wish I had better news for you, but that's where we are.
Okay. All right. Well, Bill, you want to give us the rundown on prices and then phone numbers and, of course, the website address?
Sure. Well, probably the best thing to do, if you want to look at current pricing, go to dancingdots.com and click on the products link. They're the major products we've talked about. We have GoodFeel. The Braille Music Translator comes with the Lime Editor and a music scanning program called SharpEye. That sells for $995 in the U.S. There's a kind of GoodFeel without the Braille, which we call Lime Aloud. That's Lime and SharpEye. They both have the scripts, and that's $495. And if you want to call us, it's 610-783-6692. The pricing on Cake Talking is $289 for the scripts and tutorial, and the price you pay for Sonar varies according to which edition and whether you're a student. So again, look at dancingdots.com and click on the products link.
That's not a bad price for scripts, for something of that complexity.
Well, thank you. I think it's a price point that seems to work, but it really is a specialty product. And the tutorials that David wrote are brilliant and very helpful, probably about 300 pages of information written for the JAWS user on how to use the product. And they come in the form of Word documents that install with the scripts.
Okay. Well, guess what, everybody? We're right up to the top of the hour here. So, Bill and Chrissy and Daryl, if you can just hold on just a minute, we're going to go ahead and say goodnight and to everyone. We'll see you all next week. We're going to be bringing on Jamal Mazrui. He's going to be talking to us all about his, bunch of different software applications that he's developed, and we're going to talk about programming from a blindness perspective. So that's what's coming up next week. We'll see all of you next week on the next episode of ACB Radio's Main Menu and Main Menu Live.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.